Our neighbours, Zimbabwe, have qualified for the Rugby World Cup for the first time since 1991. And today, you are going to get a front row seat as to how the Sables have made history. I've also got head coach Peter Bernardi, who is going to join us to talk all about this wonderful achievement. But before we get to any of that, I want to invite you to join me with a short trip down memory lane. So about a century ago, Zimbabwe was known as Southern Rhodesia. That would change to Rhodesia, and over the decades, they would face touring teams to South Africa, like the British and Irish Lions, for example. Famously, in 1949, Rhodesia became the first and to date only non-Tier 1 nation to beat the All Blacks. That is something we must never forget. Rhodesia also featured in the Currie Cup and other South African competitions over the years. Fast forward to the 1980s, and because of apartheid, South Africa was excluded from the first Rugby World Cup. Instead, the International Rugby Football Board, as they were known at the time, invited Zimbabwe to play. Our Limpopo neighbours found themselves in Pool 4, where they were beaten 21-20 by Romania, 60-21 by Scotland, and 70-12 by eventual finalists France. Zimbabwe then qualified for the 1991 Rugby World Cup. This time they were in Pool 2, where they lost 55-11 to Ireland, 51-12 to the Scots, and 52-8 to Japan. A lot of Zimbabwean players at that stage were considered to be part of their golden generation. And we've seen several Zimbabwe-born players become Springboks since then. Think of Adrian Garvey, Tendai the Beast Mtawarira, Tondorai Chavanga, and captains Gary Teichman and Bobby Skinstad. Zimbabwe then failed to qualify for the Rugby World Cup in 1995. They were beaten in qualifying by Namibia and Cote d'Ivoire, who surprisingly qualified. After that, though, it was the Namibians who began to dominate African rugby apart from the Springboks. So much so that the Welwitschians qualified alongside South Africa for every Rugby World Cup from 1999 to 2023. Things got so bad that in 2004, Zimbabwe even lost to Madagascar. There was a brief revival when the Sables won the 2012 Africa Cup. That is the annual continental tournament, but South Africa doesn't play in that. But then, 12 years later, Zimbabwe again won the Africa Cup, and it seemed as if something was different this time. There was a sense that this would not be a false dawn. The team would go on an incredible unbeaten run and successfully defend their title. And by winning the 2025 Africa Cup, the Sables ensured qualification for the 2027 Rugby World Cup. And so, after a 36-year absence, Zimbabwe will be back at the main event. One of the reasons I'm excited about all of this, guys, is because I actually have family in Zimbabwe. Now, I'm not from there, but my grandparents actually live in Bulawayo. And one of the men who played a big role in all of this is head coach Peter Bernardi. Fans of Western Province and the Pumas might also remember him as a player in the mid-2000s. Peter, welcome to Front Row Rugby.
Thank you very much, Peter. Lovely name you've got there.
I agree. Lovely to have you here. Peter, I hope that what I've just described there is accurate. You can correct me if any of that was wrong. But if not, then I would love you to tell us how it came to be that you got involved with Zimbabwean rugby in a coaching capacity.
So I think as we chatted a little bit earlier, I finished my schooling in Zimbabwe and then came to Cape Town, where I was spent a year at Paul Roos and then at Stellenbosch. So very much sort of became a product of the South African setup, but always keeping a keen eye on Zim. So I did go and play for them. I did play sevens, a bit of sevens rugby for Zimbabwe and 15s. So I was always just keeping in touch with the boys. In 2021, I went to watch just the guys who had come for a tournament. So the Sables had come up for a tournament and they needed a little bit of help. So I got involved with Coach Brendan Dawson at the time. So I started just assisting from then. So I joined him for the 2022 campaign, which was a qualifying year. We played a little bit of Currie Cup in the B division, and we were based in Cape Town, so it all fitted in pretty well. And then 2023, I assisted again, and then last year they asked me to take over as the head coach. So it's been a couple of years watching and learning, and then now just. Probably, what is it? I think it's 18 months now that I've been the head coach of the Sables.
We'll talk a little bit about Coach Dawson later on. But as I detailed there, Zimbabwe obviously were involved in 87 and 91 and then didn't qualify between 95 and 23. And there were some low moments there as well. And then things began to turn around. I think people started taking notice when the Sables won that Rugby Africa Cup last year. But what would you say was the turning point?
Look, we've had problems in Zimbabwe, as you know. So definitely 2000 onwards, there were the political issues, but which obviously led to the economy struggling, and that obviously affects all sport. So I think just as we've stabilized a little bit, we've been able to just get a little bit more help in. We've always relied on sponsorships and partners. Probably more than obviously the Namibians who got the qualification and who got the funding, you know. So it's a bit tricky once you fall behind in that sense. So sort of turning that around is not easy. But yeah, we've had good people on board who've helped us a lot, and we followed a plan and a model which we thought would work, and very like fortunately for us. Things have sort of worked out, obviously, and so we're looking forward to the new challenges and the new problems that qualification brings. But yeah, very, very exciting times.
Absolutely. So after winning the 2024 Africa Cup, as I mentioned a second ago, there seemed to be a feeling from the outside that qualification was a possibility for the World Cup, that is. How confident were you?
Yeah, so I think you need to really believe, first of all, that you can go and qualify. So getting through the 2024 tournament, it was basically a dry run with no qualification at stake. So, you know, perhaps the other countries weren't as prepared, maybe, or as best prepared. So managing to get through that was certainly a confidence booster for us. We managed to beat Namibia for the first time in, I think it was 23 years. So even though they might not have been at full strength, we gathered a lot of belief from that. So building up into the 2025 version, we knew that everybody would come back a bit stronger, a bit more well-funded, and get probably more of their top players down. But we knew that what we had in us, we had put in the work, and we needed a little bit of luck. But you don't get given anything, you know, if you don't put in the effort. So we knew that we had put in the effort, and whatever would come would be sort of earned. So there was a belief that we had earned our spot, certainly in the semis and the finals. So yeah, once it happened, you know, then I think it's all still sinking in a little bit. But yeah, certainly very special for the country. We hope to, you know, to use this as a springboard, hopefully to take us to a different level, and just to help future coaches and players have access to stuff that we've worked hard for, and the coaches before us have worked very hard just to keep the game of rugby running. It's not always easy. So we are very blessed to be in the situation that we're in currently, and we need to make the most of it.
And then you did actually pull off that Rugby Africa Cup victory, beating Namibia in the final. It's almost 2 weeks ago now, more or less. Let's just go back to that because obviously it's still fresh in the memory. How satisfying was that moment?
Yes, it's tremendously satisfying. I joke, it's like you almost you know, you're like you You need to just wait as a coach, and there's either like a death sentence or you're being set free at 4 o'clock on a Saturday, you know. So you there's so there was so much at stake. The stress was enormous for the players, the staff, everybody. So as you say, we just hope that the boys, we told the boys to, you know, just accept the magnitude of the situation, saying that it's not an important game or it's just another rugby game would be a bit of a lie. So there was no dressing it up. We knew what we were playing for. The boys were amazing, to be honest. We didn't play our best, but you know, at the 60th minute, we went 30 points to 16 up. And it looked like we could finish off the game strong, but obviously the Namibians had different ideas, and we had to hang on for a nail-biting finish. So yeah, it's something certainly that's not good for, I think, all the coaches and fans. Probably aged a little bit in that 20 minutes, or that certainly I did. But yeah, to get through it at the end of the day was amazing, and yeah, so now we're looking forward to the next steps.
I think something that would have definitely added to that aging in those 80 minutes was Tiaan Swanepoel, the Namibian player, with that last minute penalty that if he had put it over, they would have actually won, right? How nervous were you in that moment?
Yeah, we know Tian very well. Like, we study the players, and the moment the penalty was given, like three or four guys in our coaching box said, "Jeepers, this guy can kick. He can easily kick 50 meters." And it's not really what you want to hear, but or no. There was a slight breeze against him, so at that point, it's not in your hands anymore, you know. So he hit the ball very well, and I think he missed the post by like probably 2 meters. It was certainly far enough. So we understand what could have happened, but fortunately it didn't. And for a change, you know, the luck was a little bit on our side. And as I said, I think we've earned every little bit of it. So yeah, we take that one and run for sure.
Absolutely. Now, earlier we spoke about Coach Brendan Dawson. Between the two of you, I've got the Sables undefeated now for 3 years. How proud are you of that record?
Yeah, so I've learned an awful lot from Coach Dorsey. He obviously gave me an opportunity to get involved with the 15s. He had a huge role in just keeping rugby alive in our country, along with many other, let's call it, people that really fought in the trenches, you know. So a lot of credit goes to him. He's still involved in schoolboy rugby, so rugby is in his blood. He's certainly laid foundations, very deep foundations for Zim rugby. It was a pleasure working with him, learning from him, helping him. Yeah, so that was a special period. He had done very well. He had an amazing record with the Sables. So yeah, I'm very happy to be able to continue his work.
So, Peter, the draw for the Rugby World Cup takes place in December. It's an expanded 24-team tournament. So that means we're going to have six pools, four teams in each pool, and four of the third place sides will also go through to the last 16. I estimate that one win will be enough in many cases to actually go through to the last 16. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think we'll quickly find out what the pace is like, and the tempo, and the accuracy, and the strength, and the speed. If we start playing the tier two teams, so we're probably bordering between tier three and tier two at the moment. We would be pushed into tier two, probably to play in the Nations Cup, which looks like it's going to happen. So very quickly there, we will find out if we are capable of winning a game, or what needs to happen to compete at the World Cup. So I think everybody's goal was to go to the World Cup, but there's obviously a step above that, which is competing, you know, and representing well. And then there's the further step of winning a game for the Africa 2 team, which has never happened. So it's been, since 1987, Zimbabwe lost their pool games. Ivory Coast lost their pool games. And then the Namibians have had a tough time. So, again, these are challenges that we must take head on. And we want to represent the rest of Africa. We're super proud of South Africa. And as I mentioned, this is also like my home. So I'm a big Springbok supporter. It will be quite surreal if we ended up on a field together. But we need to represent the rest of Africa well. We hope that Namibia come through the repechage so that Africa is, represented by three countries. So definitely going to try and to win a match. If it doesn't happen in this cycle, we hope to qualify and then have another crack at it in 2031.
Absolutely. Peter, you referenced the Nations Cup there. I want to talk a little bit about that because it's something that I think will actually help Zimbabwe next year, 2026, coming up against Georgia, Spain, Samoa, etc. And all of those matches taking place in 1 year. So in that 1 year, as it turns out, before the Rugby World Cup, how helpful do you think that's going to be for you guys?
Yeah, I think a credit to World Rugby for getting this off the ground, if it indeed does happen. I think what we've always found is that the Tier 2 teams, when they pitch up at the World Cup, they're not used to the intensity and the accuracy that they meet. So if we are able to just get a sample of that, hopefully there will be a little adaptation period where we may struggle. But, if that goes well, it's going to just help us to compete and to make the World Cup a better spectacle for everybody.
For sure. Peter, for folks who haven't seen your team in action, I would say that you have an enthusiastic defense, and we often tend to see a lot of two-man tackles. Would you say I'm on the right track with my assessment?
Yeah, I think what we've got, we probably have to play a game that sort of suits our athletes and our game model relies a lot on athleticism and effort and energy. So that ties into the defense, just where guys need to be, they need to be active and putting bodies on the line. So if that's how we're described, that's quite, it'll probably be, it's good for us. I think it's the same with the way we attack, we want to get the ball to the edges, to the boys who can run. We're working hard on our set piece. We've got excellent coaches putting in a lot of effort there, and the boys have done well. You're not going to beat a Namibian team if you can't win lineouts and scrums. So we've managed to get some of those pieces in place, and obviously we're going to need to take it up to, a couple of levels up. But we rely on the DNA of our people. We're athletic and fast. So, and then now we're just trying to add the stuff that you really need in Test rugby to cope.
For sure. And I want to talk about the attack a little bit as well, because it looks to me like you've got a backline with a lot of flair and an eye for a gap. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, so we're very blessed. I think we've got a nice mixture of the older boys and the younger boys. And as you said, we've got... It's probably one of the easier things to coach in Zimbabwe. I've given the hard work to the other assistants, and then I coach the attack, because there you can just throw the ball and the guys will get the job done in most cases. Things will obviously tighten up a little bit now, but we've got lovely individuals who've got the talent. So it's not about just throwing the ball around. We know that it's not risky to play what's in front of you. If it's on, the ball must go to the edge. We've got people who can strike. We've got people who carry the ball up, and we've got creative players. So there's a nice little blend that we've got, certainly in the back line. And that's complemented with loose forwards who can really run with the ball. So we're lucky in that sense, that we've got the players. We are we are working on strengthening. You know, there's a lot of Zimbabwean qualified boys who are representing themselves well in top leagues. Hopefully we've opened another little door for a couple to want to play for Zimbabwe and to go and play the World Cup. So, you know, all those are little things that make us stronger as a team, and we obviously need to be as strong as we possibly can to cope with what's coming.
You mentioned loose forwards there. If I had, it's probably my biggest flaw as someone who watches rugby, in that I kind of only see loose forwards, right? The loose forward, it's always my favorite player in the team, or the player that I'm most impressed by. But having said that, I'll try and broaden my horizons a little bit, right? I was actually really impressed by the center combination of Kudzwai Mashawi, who to me, he looks like he's the same size as Mathieu Bastereau, the former French center. And then you've also got Brandon Mudzekenyedzi, who to me, I would almost say he's a little bit like Lucanio Am to my eyes. That's a really impressive combo you've got there in midfield.
Yeah, so we're very lucky with those two. You know, Mashawi is not a small man. I think he's 107 kgs. He's not the tallest guy, so he's like a little wrecking ball, and he seems to understand the physics well, and like he throws his weight around at the right time. And then obviously, yeah, so obviously there's not always spaces in defense. And if somebody needs to truck it up, that's his job. And he's certainly not afraid to do that. He's obviously a good tackler also. He was our sevens captain for many years. So he's a bit older now and a bit heavier, but he's still, the value that he adds is amazing. And then obviously his partner in crime, Brandon Mudzekenyedzi, he's been part of the Sables for a little while. He's always been reliable, a very, very talented boy, distributes, he passes, he tackles, he runs. So we are very blessed with the centers that we do have. I'm sure they will face tougher challenges coming up, you know, but I think they certainly have the tools to cope a couple of levels up, or I certainly hope that they do. And then obviously we're building the depth to that also. You know, they're not going to. Kudzwai is a young 32-year-old, but we are hoping to get him certainly to Australia. But yeah, working on the depth there. But those two, very blessed to have them.
And obviously, we know that a lot of rugby fans love a backline player with gas. Usually, those would be guys on the wing. Edward Sigalke is a player that fits that mold, I think, for Zimbabwe, would you say?
Yeah, Eddie's been a high achiever since school, man. He's a boy that's everywhere he goes, he's done well. So we're very. He's quite a reliable person to have in your squad. You know, you know what you're going to get from him. People struggle to tackle him. He's very strong for his relative size, and obviously the speed is crazy. So yeah, Eddie's done very well since school. He played in our under 20s team, which won two versions of their Africa Cup. I think his university team that they just played for in Varsity Cup won their section, and now he's played two Africa Cups with us and won. So at some point, Eddie's going to have to learn to lose, but we hope it's not too soon.
Absolutely. And I want to talk also quickly, staying in the back line, Captain Hilton Mudariki. He seems also a lively player, a dangerous player, sort of sniping runs around the fringes. Very impressive indeed.
Yeah, Hilton's been our leader for a while. He was the leader under Coach Dawson, and I think before that even. So he's become a veteran captain. He's still the fittest guy in our team. He's one of the strongest. So he certainly leads by example off the field, and on the field he's ever reliable also. So he's somebody that's earned his spot through performing and the way that he behaves off the field. And yeah, certainly we need to find again people to step into his shoes. But you know, he makes sure that he makes those shoes very big, and the work that's going to be done by somebody taking his position is enormous. So credit to him for sticking it through. You know, he's been part of the Sables. I think he's in a period where we didn't play many matches. He's managed to get 50 caps for our national team. And I'm so happy for him that he's been able to finish off his career, but, you know, to win two Africa Cups consecutively and a qualifier as a captain is testament to his effort and commitment to our group.
All right, Peter, I wanted to just keep my bias to one side, so we spoke about the back line quite in depth there. As I mentioned to you, I've got a soft spot for a loose forward, and to that end, I'd say Dylan Utete is a man who has caught my eye. What is it that you would say that makes him so special?
Dylan is a player that played a little bit, so we sort of tested him in 2022. He's still a raw athletic flanker. So last year for the Africa Cup was the first time that I thought, listen, we'll recall him. He's been playing rugby here in Cape Town at Villages Rugby Club. So just as a club player to mix with the likes of, you know, Tino Mavisere, who's at the Sharks, Godfrey Muzanargo, who's a player from the Falca, and then Jason Fraser's playing in Utzon in Pro D2, Nevers. In France. So for Dylan, sort of is the non-professional guy, but he blends in and he adds a level of physicality that I think Zimbabweans need, or like I feel like our team needs. Again, a big strong guy that carries abrasively and tackles very well. So he's a bit of our workhorse guy. You know, you don't have to give him too many instructions. You just tell Dole to, you know, to carry and tackle, and he understands the assignment, and has done amazing work for us. So he's played a lot of the big test matches since last year's semi-final. His debut was actually, his run-on debut was actually against Namibia in the match that we won. Since then, he's played in UAE and Korea, and now again, you know, playing a big part in our Africa Cup or World Cup qualifying campaign. So very proud that he's made the step up, and the value that he's added is enormous.
Okay, let's talk a little bit now about the state of rugby in Zimbabwe. We spoke earlier about the turnaround strategy. I think that the sport remains popular in the country. I mean, I just take, for example, if we look at the reaction of the fans after Zimbabwe qualified for this Rugby World Cup, I mean, there were people in the stands that were in tears, right? There were people at the airport to welcome the team home. So that shows us that there is a love for rugby in Zimbabwe, which I think a lot of people from outside the country may not necessarily have known that. Having said that, I mean, I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that I've got family in Zimbabwe. I've been there a couple of times. And in my experience, Zimbabweans love their sport. But in terms of development and facilities, what is the state of play, would you say?
Yeah, so I think just the first point, that our country's had a very, very rich rugby history. So as you mentioned, that, you know, they did play against the All Blacks in the past. So it's a sport that's certainly in the fabric of our people. Our school's rugby is extremely enthusiastically supported. Probably the level is obviously not like what the South Africans are, but the fan support and the engagement is on a very similar level. So certainly the interest is there. We do have a problem just after school. So after school, our club setups are fully amateur, and, you know, we're struggling there with facilities and stuff. But we rely quite heavily on the public school boys, you know. So after school, a lot of the private school boys who might make up the Craven Week teams and stuff, they end up going to universities or leave the country or stop playing. So we rely very heavily on the government schools, as we call them in Zimbabwe, and way more than half, 60 or 70% of our team now playing were from government schools. So we need to make sure that those schools stay alive, and because those are the boys which ultimately continue serving, and playing after school. And then we need to find out how can we attract the other kids just to keep them in the game. So whether it's just improving our local league so that boys feel like it's worth staying, or just offering them something, is certainly hopefully the funding from World Rugby that we get, if we can spend it carefully, and developing our infrastructure, hopefully that leaves a lasting legacy for the next group of coaches and players to come.
And Peter, as you mentioned there, rugby in Zimbabwe is still an amateur sport, but there are quite a few Sables who are making a living playing in countries like South Africa, France, Spain, and Japan.
Yeah, so as soon as the boys become talented, I think we or get noticed or become good enough, then and they want to continue playing. So I was maybe an example of that. There wasn't really a rugby career to be had in Zimbabwe. So you go to where you can. A lot of our boys end up in the French. There's so much rugby in France. There's probably 128 teams that you can be signed as a professional. So a lot of our boys end up there, even if you're in the fourth or fifth or sixth division. And then obviously we've got guys in the URC. So we've got Tapiwa Mafura at the Lions. We've got Blythe Mabesere at the Sharks. So those guys are doing amazing work here. Blythe is a proper product of Zimbabwe. He went to school there. So there are ways, let's say, out of the country and into these top setups still. Klopas Skondiona, our tight end, just signed at Northampton Saints, so we're very proud of him. And he took his first steps through Zim playing in the Currie Cup. So those are all little legacy things. If we can be a window for the players to show their talents, and then to get signed by other professional unions, then that's excellent, I think. So we are not afraid of losing our boys, because hopefully they come back if they've seen that we are the ones who gave them that opportunity. And obviously now it can go to a greater level with us hopefully playing at a World Cup, and boys playing against world-class teams. If we were to play against an Ireland or an All Blacks, and somebody has a good game, who then they're guaranteed like to cope at the high level. So, or for clubs, it's the best audition ever. So yeah, if we are a window or a for boys to be noticed, we're more than happy to provide that window.
Absolutely. So, Peter, what needs to happen now to make sure that this Rugby World Cup qualification is not a once-off, because, but a regular thing rather, and perhaps cast in stone that Zimbabwe are now ahead of Namibia in the pecking order for good?
Yeah, so I think that's our first goal. We want to go to the World Cup and do well, but we want to. You will never guarantee qualification, but we need to become so strong that we always have a good chance of qualification. We need other countries in our region to get stronger. So just around Zimbabwe, we need to support Zambia and Botswana. More they play, the more the easier games we have access to. So yeah, we need to become we are hoping to become Africa's number two team, clearly. All the other countries are putting in huge effort. I mean, the Kenyans, the Ugandans, and Namibia will probably rebound, so it's up to us to if there is a little edge that we keep it, or we make it stronger.
Absolutely. Peter Bernardi, thank you so much for joining us today on Front Row Rugby. It was an absolute pleasure having you on your fascinating discussion about Zimbabwean rugby. And I wish you and the Sables everything of the best for that 2027 Rugby World Cup in Australia.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Peter. It's been a pleasure chatting to you.
So what do you think? Are you excited about Zimbabwe's return to the Rugby World Cup? Or do you fear there is a lot of work to be done to avoid any embarrassments in 2027? Let me know in the comment section down below. And just before I go, guys, I'd like to encourage you to head on over to my Patreon page and sign up as one of my patrons. There are great benefits, like, for example, you can get discounts at my soon-to-be-launched online store, you can win Springbok tickets to test matches, you can win Springbok merch and gear, you could get me to write an ebook for you on your favorite Springbok rugby player, and you can even stand a chance to win the brand new James Small biography that's coming out soon. In order to make that happen, I need you to head on over to my Patreon page, sign up as a patron. The link is in the description area below. It'll cost you as little as $5 per month. It goes all the way up to $100 per month, but it's entirely up to you. Any support will be greatly appreciated. I thank you in advance, and I look forward to your company next time.